I'm Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and former host here at PW Torch Livecast. If you're looking for my shows, they have moved as of July 2017. They're now called the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, available through Podcast One. Enter Wade Keller on your podcast app or iTunes and subscribe to the new Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, where I cover Raw and my first show of the week, SmackDown, with my second show of the week, and then the Flagship Edition with a co-host, and we cover a broad array of pro wrestling current events, and then I end the week with a weekly interview. That's the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, now at Podcast One. Subscribe today. Just search Wade Keller.
Blog Talk Radio.
It is Thursday, October 5th, 2017. This is the post-impact edition of the PW Torch Livecast here at pwtorchlivecast.com. I am Mike McMahon, joined by Andrew Socek. Andrew, how are you this beautiful Thursday? I'm going to try to be optimistic. It's going to be hard.
Oh, dang it, because I was gonna say I'm a little bored. Not because of this show. I like this show. This is fun, but from what I just saw the last 2 hours. But, you know, if you're going to be positive, I will be too. I'm great.
I'm going to try to be. I have a feeling it's not going to last very long. yeah, so this is the post-Impact edition of the PW Torch Livecast. So we are going to talk about, of course, Impact Wrestling, which just aired on Pop TV here in the United States. Okay, you know what? Before we go too far into ripping the show apart, which I'm sure we're going to do, just because that's where I'm leaning anyway. One positive I will say, they're at least building to Bound for Glory. I think we just mentioned on the show last week that, you know, here we are a couple of weeks away or about a month away from the show, and there was really no build to Bound for Glory whatsoever. They're building the Bound for Glory. That's my one positive.
Yes, that is true.
Now
they're building towards it.
They're building towards Bound for Glory with a bunch of matches we've already seen.
Yes,
but they're building to Bound for Glory.
I was going to say basically anything you could say positive about this show, you could immediately say yeah, but so, but
oh yeah,
hey, they're trying, I guess.
Yeah.
A little bit.
You could say that. we'll run down the show in a little bit, and then we'll also have our top three later on in the show. Our top three this week is our top three most frustrating moments of 2017, and I could pick three just from the show. But we'll have a top three, our top three most frustrating moments from Impact Wrestling coming up later in the show. You can join us at 515-605-9345. Again, the number is 515-605-9345. Just make sure you hit the number one when you're on hold. That'll tell us that you want to get in the caller queue. And you can also email us at impactlivecast@gmail.com. Again, that number is that email address is impactlivecast@gmail.com. And we got a bunch of people lined up at the phone line, so we're going to get to the phones pretty much right away. But let's go to the email inbox before we get to the phone lines. And this email comes from Tony in New Jersey. Tony emailed about 3 minutes ago and said that the opening match was horrible, and even more horrible is that it was two segments, and even worse, it was wasted for a DQ by Johnny Impact, which leads to a dumb number one contenders match that no one buys Garza Jr. Even winning. He says he loved the LAX backstage segment. The OVE tag match was okay. The women's segment was beautiful. So the six-man X-Division match came on, which was shower time for me. And I came back to the EC3 James Storm versus AAA match. And again, why would we care about GFW feuding with a Mexican promotion? Must not be that important to GFW, since no other members of the roster came to help EC3 and Storm. Another bad episode of Impact. Final score, 2 out of 10. That comes from Tony in New Jersey. And we'll get to the show segment by segment and run through all the stuff he talked about. He sort of did a rundown of the whole show. But yeah, I agree with a lot of what he said.
I think you pretty much summed things up. My connection was going a little bit, so I couldn't hear everything he said. There was a lot wrong with this show. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear everything.
Yeah, we're losing you. Actually, it's cutting in and out. Do you want to try? Do you want to try calling back?
Yeah, I will do that.
Okay. All right, so Andrew's going to try calling back, and we'll get him back up, and then we'll get to phone calls at 515-605-9345. But, yeah, Tony, I agree with most of your email. I didn't think the backstage the opening match was good at all. I agree with you. I thought it was a waste to have a DQ finish. Not only does no one buy Garza Jr. winning this match, becoming number one contender, my question is why is he in this match to begin with? And this is where they lose me from a logic standpoint. You know, tell me what Garza Jr. has done to earn a title opportunity or a chance for a title opportunity. He hasn't done anything to earn that. He's been in a tag team for a while, since he joined the company. And even that tag team hasn't been seen on TV for weeks. He's been in a couple of one-on-one matches, I guess. But he's barely been a singles wrestler. You know, he's been a singles wrestler for all of the last 3 minutes. And we're going to put him in a match that could potentially make him the number one contender to the world title. That shouldn't happen. You know, if you're trying to present yourself with any shred of credibility, that should not happen. A guy needs a lot more than one match and a DQ finish in order to suddenly potentially be fighting for the world title. I think it demeans the title. I think it demeans the process that your wrestlers are in trying to move up the card. You know, why do matches mean anything at all? Why are we supposed to invest in anything you do? And why is anything, from a match standpoint in the show, why is anything important if a guy can come in and just like that, all of a sudden, he's number one contender to the world title or in a number one contender match? Garza Jr. and Johnny Impact have not been presented as equals whatsoever. So just none of it from a logic standpoint makes sense. If you were booking this as MMA, if you were booking this as real sport, Garza Jr. has done nothing to be in that spot, potentially wrestling for a world title. Or two matches away from potentially wrestling for a world title. It just doesn't make any sense. Speaking of things that don't make any sense, why do Garza Jr. and Johnny Impact hate each other? Why all of a sudden are these guys trying to kill each other every single time they're in the ring? You know, again, they've barely interacted, and they have a giant pull-apart brawl with security and everything else. Where's the hate coming from? Where's the hate coming from? Andrew's going to call back in on the phone line here in a second. But I just don't get it. I don't understand why he's in that spot, number one. I don't understand why Garza Jr. and Johnny Impact have all this hate. You know, why do they dislike each other so much? Because of one little thing with a DQ finish tonight? It just doesn't make any sense. Nothing about Johnny Impact and Garza Jr. make any sense, and I just don't get why Garza Jr. is being put in the spot when we all know that what they're going to ultimately get to is Johnny Impact versus Eli Drake in a rematch at Bound for Glory. That's what they're heading towards. I think everybody knows that's what they're heading towards. Garza Jr., as Tony said in his email, has no chance of winning this match next week. Not a single solitary chance of winning this match next week. So I don't understand why it makes any sense. And then at the same time, you know, I alluded to it earlier, but so far, I mean, with a couple of exceptions, they're throwing some wrinkles in with some multi-person matches, but every match that they've booked for Bound for Glory is a rematch. Explain to me why I'm supposed to spend $55 for an HD feed to watch this show when I've seen it all before. That's something that I think is concerning moving forward, too. Andrew, you're back up here. One of the things I was just saying was a couple of things. I don't understand what Garza Jr. has done to earn the opportunity to potentially fight for the world title. Number one. Number two, am I missing something? But why do Garza Jr. and Johnny Impact hate each other so much? They have a pull-apart brawl, and I can't figure out why they dislike each other. Have they ever explained that? Have they mentioned any reason at all, other than a couple of DQ finishes, why these guys want to rip each other's head off?
No. I wrote that down in my notes, too, because the only thing that I saw was that Impact went after him, and Garza, like, backed into the corner, and that was it. And I don't know why that's like, you guys want to go at each other's throats so much, you know, why Jim Cornette would book that. And exactly. And I caught it on commentary, too. Jeremy Borash was saying something, how Garza has been unstoppable lately. Like, what is he talking about? When was the last time Garza won a match?
Exactly. On the house shows that they don't have? I mean, someone needs to explain that, because he's been in a tag team, which has barely been on television for the last several weeks. And he has never been a singles wrestler in the company. Never. And now he's in storyline, one match away from wrestling for the world title. And I don't think he's going to win. I mean, that's not the point. The point is, you are hurting the credibility of your championship when a guy can just, out of nowhere, without earning the right to be in a number one contenders match, find himself in a number one contenders match. The only reason, the one thing that Garza Jr. has done to earn a spot in a number one contenders match is make Johnny Impact mad, apparently. So if you're on that roster, again, if we're trying to think of this from a realistic standpoint, and that's what I think you need to do if you're booking wrestling, you want people to suspend their disbelief. Well, you need to follow a certain – there needs to be certain rules you follow, and you have to make the decisions your wrestlers are making seem to be as real as possible. So if Garza Jr. Got into a brawl with Johnny Impact and it earns him the shot to be in a number one contenders match – why doesn't whoever win that match next week, why doesn't someone just come out and jump them? Because apparently that would put them in a match for the number one contendership. Why doesn't anybody just go ahead and attack Eli Drake? Because it seems like if Eli Drake wants to fight you, or if you fight a little bit, you're going to be in a world title match. It doesn't make any sense. And I think it hurts the credibility of the whole show, not to mention the championship.
Yeah, completely agree. And especially just how Garza has been positioned. He's a mid-carder at best. I mean, he has no momentum going behind him. There's no reason to really get behind him in any sort of way. And yeah, it's just when somebody like that can just jump to the top without a story behind it, there's nothing compelling about it. And the emailer noted just like, yeah, how the show started out with those two. And that was my thoughts exactly. Like, why in 2017 is Chris Masters starting out a show with a guy who has like zero character development? It's not going to catch anybody's attention.
Exactly. All right, let's go to, we're going to go to our first break a little bit early, because like I said, we have a bunch of phone calls to run through, a bunch of people on the line at 515-605-9345. And again, you can also email the show at impactlivecast@gmail.com. Quick 30-second break. When we come back, we're going to hit right to the phone calls right here on the PW Torch Livecast.
When you want to know when the next episode of the PW Torch Livecast is scheduled or catch up on a show you missed, check out our homepage, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can stream the latest shows right from that page, or download the show, or get a link to subscribe on a podcast app. That's pwtorchlivecast.com for the latest shows, and also catch up on shows you missed at pwtorchlivecast.com.
All right, back here in the PW Torch Livecast post-impact show. We're just going to run through these phone calls, and we'll go with the people that have been on hold the longest. So up first is area code 615. 615, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, this is Kenny from Gallatin, Tennessee, VIP member. How are you guys doing tonight?
Hey, Kenny, not bad. How are you?
Pretty good.
You know what, Kenny? I usually have your number in here, but I think I saved it as the wrong one, so sorry about that.
Well, actually, I changed my phone number, so I'm calling you from a new phone number, so that's probably why.
There it is. All right.
Yeah, that explains why. Anyway, I've got three quick notes that I want to make, because I did watch the show, and I've noticed You talked a little bit about the match between Adonis and Garza Jr. and how it's all leading to Eli Drake and Johnny Impact. And honestly, I really don't get it. They had a match last week on free TV, and now they're going to have another one on pay-per-view, assuming that Impact is going to win the match and win the championship. I just don't get it. I mean, to me, I know they had the show. We all know that a lot of those shows are kind of taped in advance, but still, it just boggles my mind that we'll go into next month and they're going to have another match live on pay-per-view when we've already seen them wrestle once before. It kind of kills it for me in a sense that, in a way, while Garza Jr. may not be the right answer, I would like to see maybe a triple threat just to break up the monotony, maybe try to elevate somebody and try to actually build a main event star. Is that something that you guys agree with?
I totally agree. Yeah, it's nothing against Johnny Impact, who I think has been a nice addition to the roster. I don't know why you would go with a rematch here, or in particular, just so many rematches, because they've booked a lot of them. I mean, the tag team title match is going to be a rematch. The women's match, not really a rematch between Gail Kim and Sienna, but kind of, because they're just throwing some other competitors in there. I think that's what they're going to do in the X Division, too. Lashley and Moose is a match we've seen before as well. So just a lot of rematches, and it just seems, it feels like, anyway, I think because we've seen these matches before on Impact, especially in the world title match, it makes it feel like, okay, well, I'm going to just be buying an episode of Impact. I think you can do it. You can do it with one or two matches. You know, I think you could do it with a world title match if you really, really wanted to. But you've got to make other things on the show different. And I know that they're adding some stipulations to the tag title match and things like that. But still, these are all feuds that have been going on for a while. Maybe the idea is, hey, this is going to be when all the feuds end, and it's going to be the culmination of everything, and we're going to move on to new storylines after that. But, you know, I think you're going to have a hard time getting people to buy a pay-per-view when you get so many matches that people have already seen before. Andrew, what are your thoughts there?
Oh, yeah, completely. And it's not just that they gave us that match last week. It was 26 minutes last week. So they didn't do like a 3-minute schmoz and then, you know, make you want to see a much longer version. Like, that went really long, and I doubt the actual match at the pay-per-view will even go that long. I wouldn't mind the idea of a third participant in the match. I'm probably just more down on Garza Jr. Not, like, forever. I just think at the moment he's struggling to connect. And, I mean, off the top of my head, all I really think about is him tearing his pants off when I think of his character. So I think they need to work on that a bit before they could just throw him into the main event. But I'm not down on that idea, though, of trying to give somebody that shot.
I mean, it would be hard to do this because, like you said, Kenny, the shows are taped. But one option, and I'm not sure how excited people are about this, it doesn't really excite me all that much, but Alberto El Patron was supposed to wrestle Jeff Jarrett. That's what the plans were for Bound for Glory. It doesn't seem like that's going to happen. So what do you do with El Patron if you're going to bring him back? I mean, maybe they find a way to slide him into the world title match, but it would be really hard to explain and kind of clunky considering there's going to be no TV to build that up, other than maybe some interview stuff they can tape. But I agree. I mean, it's baffling to me as well.
Well, it's funny. You just mentioned Alberto El Patron. I know that he had participated in some tapings for the David Marquez Championship Wrestling from Hollywood promotion. And I also know that, obviously, with Billy Corgan now in control of the NWA, the NWA champion had just appeared on the same tapings as well. And I don't know what the plans are. Maybe a scenario where Alberto El Patron wins the NWA title. And, you know, I always assume that if things were to work out, we could see a scenario where Corgan could work up a deal with Impact if the Global Force situation continues to get as bad as it seems with Jeff Jarrett not coming back to the company, and work a scenario where the NWA would return to Impact, at least the NWA name and the championship.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting possibility. I know Billy Corgan did some interviews this week. I think one was with Sports Illustrated where he said that he has had talks with the people from Anthem Sports. You know, Corgan had issues with people in TNA, but he didn't have issues with people in Anthem. I think he was upset that Anthem bought the company just because he wanted to buy the company. But his issues were with Dixie Carter and Dean Broadhead and other people within the old management structure of Impact Wrestling. So, yeah, I thought it was interesting. He didn't really go into specifics with what the discussions were or what they talked about, but he did say something. And, again, I'm paraphrasing because I don't have the quote in front of me, but I believe it's something to do with, like, if the right opportunity was there for the two companies to work together, it was something that they were going to do and we're excited to do. So, Andrew, do you think that we could see that, maybe the NWA and the NWA title return?
I would like that at this point. I mean, they're in trouble right now with the global championship because I'm assuming they'll probably have to ditch that again and go back to the Impact title. So I would hope that things with the NWA and Corgan are more stable and that would actually feel like more of a fresh start as opposed to what they've been doing. And I think Corgan said he talks to Ed like twice a week now, so who knows how what those conversations are like. But
that seems like a lot.
I'd like to see it, but sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's just – although if you're really talking to them twice a week, those aren't just like, hey, how you doing conversations. if they're actually talking twice a week, there's clearly some business discussion going on.
Yeah, and I do hope so. I mean, I've said it on the show a couple times, but I think that kind of that Corgan era wasn't brilliant. It wasn't amazing, but it was consistently, for me, the most entertaining week to week probably Impact had ever been. So I would take it.
Oh, I agree 100%. I mean, I got to watch a little bit of clips when it was made available on YouTube, and I did find it intriguing. It's funny, you mentioned about the women's match. I watched the segment where they had Sienna, Gail Kim, Taryn Terrell, and Allie all in there. And then to top it all up, Karen Jarrett came out, did her best, a corporate, I'm the boss type of scenario we've seen over and over again. In fact, it just felt so much like a WWE segment that I literally just wanted to bang my head through the wall when I saw Karen Jarrett come out. It's like, you got to be kidding me. But, it's like they're setting up the segment again for that. And my gut feeling is coming out of it that I would more likely think that Kim would win the championship. But what are the chances do you think that she will retire after she wins the championship?
That's a great question. I mean, I think if they were going to do it for anyone, they'd do it for her. I'm not a big fan of that. I'm just not a big fan of somebody retiring with the title. But I think if there's one person that you could get away with doing it with and saying she deserves it, I think especially for that division, it's Gail Kim. Andrew, what are your thoughts there? Do you think that that's something they might actually do? I mean, Gail's talked about it so much, it would almost be a letdown, I think, if she didn't win.
Yeah. I could definitely see that happening. I think it's just a shame, though, that the build to this has been so bad. I mean, she should have came back and then just go Sienna, Gail Kim, and build that for a few months. And then they're turning it into a four-way with a few weeks left. It's just, if this is their final match ever, this just doesn't feel big enough for her contributions to the company. But I could definitely see them trying to go that route, trying to make this feel-good moment and give her the belt. But there's just no way it's going to feel as big as it should have with more forward planning.
And she also said that I think that she wants this to be her last year in wrestling. So I could also see her maybe winning the title and finishing up TV tapings to get them through to the end of the year. And maybe something happens in December, where she loses it to whomever.
I think I read that she is going to call it a career, Bound for Glory.
Oh, well, if that's
the
case, that's the case, and never mind. I was going to say it might be a feel-good moment for her to win the title there, and then, at the next set of TV tapings, because they're taping right after, that next set of TV tapings, maybe have her lose it to Taya Valkyrie or someone, put someone over on the way out. Not Sienna, because Sienna, I just don't think Sienna needs it, to feel like a big star within that division, but either Taya Valkyrie or You know, even it'd be a babyface match, but even, you know, have her put Ali over for the title and sort of pass the torch a little bit as the babyface in the division. But if she's going to finish it up at Bound for Glory, then, I mean, I guess if she wins, you're going to go with a tournament. That's the only real thing that really makes sense. And they really don't have enough women on the roster for a tournament, so I don't know what they would do.
Yeah, I agree with you there. They really are thin in that department. And the thing that really stuck me was Sienna's eye rolling during that whole segment. Is just, that was one, the thing that nitpicks me the most is that something like that where it's so repetitive. And my goodness, that was so repetitive what she did.
Yeah.
Another one quick thing and I'll go. I noticed that there were a lot of tag team matches. I think there was like three in total, which I thought was really interesting. I think that was kind of an interesting way to book a show like that, where you have a heavy dose of tag team matches as opposed to singles matches. And it's not really a question, more of an interesting take that they would go that route. I thought that was kind of cool that they decided to do a tag team friendly show, and something that maybe we can see more often in other shows. Not just, I know Ring of Honor has done that a lot with their shows. I think that, you know, Impact may be going that same route.
Yeah, no, that is a good point. Garza Jr. and Christopher Adonis was the only one-on-one match. And Andrew, I know we've talked about this in the past where they've done shows that have been heavy on tag team wrestling. But, you know, if you're trying to make yourself feel different than WWE, WWE is so anti-tag team wrestling at times. You know, going with some tag team matches, I don't think it's a bad idea.
Yeah, I would like to see it. I mean, I wish there would be more defined tag teams in the entire company, because
yeah, I agree.
Right now,
yep,
there's three, maybe four. It's very, very, very thin. I mean, even thinner than the Knockouts and the X Division. I mean, all three divisions could need some new competitors. But I don't know if it's just more coincidence or if they actually do have some sort of plan in mind to do more tag teams. But although I guess I'd probably be surprised at that. I think everything there feels just so random right now.
All right, Kenny. Well, hey, we appreciate the phone call.
All right. Thanks very much for taking it, and you guys have a good rest of the night.
You too.
Yeah, you too.
All right. You can give us a call at 515-605-9345. Let's go right to our second caller, and this comes from Kylan in New Jersey. Kylan, how are you?
I'm very well, Mike. How are you and Andrew doing this week?
We seem to be a little calmer than we were. I thought we were going to go off the rails complaining about the show, but we've held it together so far.
So far, yeah.
Yeah, you have. Considering this episode didn't give us very much to work with whatsoever.
Nah, not much at all.
No.
So, my first question for this week concerns Impact logistics. Is Bound for Glory either officially or unofficially considered to be Anthem Sports and Entertainment's first step to moving Impact into an exclusively Canadian organization? Question number one.
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I don't think that they're going to go there permanently, but I think it makes sense, and I've said this before, it makes total sense for them to move their operations there. Just from a cost standpoint, I mean, especially if there's room in their offices where they have offices for the Fight Network and everything else. Yeah, you'd be asking people to move from Nashville to Toronto, I think, is where they are. But to keep costs down, I mean, why spend the money to have offices in Nashville when really there's no reason to have the company and there's no reason to have those offices in Nashville at all? They don't tape in Nashville anymore. There's just no reason to be there. I mean, the reason they were there is because Jeff Jarrett lived there and Dixie Carter lived there. I mean, that's why the offices were there. But really, there's no reason to be in Nashville whatsoever. I think if you're going to continue to tape in Orlando, then you move the company and you move the offices down there. But realistically, they should probably move him to Canada. I think that'd be the more cost-effective way of doing it. But, you know, in terms of the show, I don't know if this is their first step in becoming a Canadian organization in terms of where they tape their product, but I did read this week that they are considering outside TV markets to tape their television, basically doing what Andrew and I have talked about in the past, where they get the show out of Orlando. And that's not that they're never going to go back there, but you know, maybe they do one taping a year in Orlando and take the other ones into larger markets, price the way that they're pricing Bound for Glory to you know, try to get people into the building. You price it cheap enough, but it helps with some of your production cost. I think if you're renting out a studio or a soundstage at Universal and you're not generating any income at all from the people in the building because you can't sell tickets. At least if you were to rent a venue, like in Ottawa, they're going to rent a venue, but they're going to sell tickets to it. And they don't need to sell, you know, 20,000 tickets to have it be successful. They just need to sell enough to cover the rent. Now you go from losing money on your TV tapings to maybe breaking even, at least from a venue standpoint. So I think it might be a step in that direction where we see them go on the move a little bit more and go on the road a little bit more where they tape their TV. I think the story I read this week, I think it was from PW Insider, but talked about they had looked at New York, they've looked at Chicago, bigger cities, which should be no surprise, where they can potentially make it work. So I think that we might be looking at a shift in that direction. I don't know if they're going to necessarily become a Canadian organization, but I do think they might take their show on the road a little bit more. Andrew, what are your thoughts there? Do you think that this is a signal of maybe some changes to the way the show's being booked or being produced?
I think it potentially could. I think a lot of it is going to ride on how these shows do in terms of ticket sales. Like if they're able to sell 500 tickets for each of those events, that's huge. And I assume then they will then move. But if they only get like 200 people and the cost of flying everyone into Canada is too much, then they'll probably keep searching. And I guess I don't even know if they have, say, a deal with Universal Studios and if they have to run so many shows there or if they can just get out whenever they want. But yeah, I think if the demand is there, then they will definitely consider moving their operations in the near future, which probably isn't a bad idea.
Yeah, and I think they're being smart about it. Like the venue in Ottawa is not a huge venue, so it's one that they can sell which means A, the rent is cheaper, but they can also sell, you know, hopefully enough tickets to not only cover their rent but make it look like it's full. And then, you know, Chicago is a market that makes sense. You know, I don't know where most of their roster lives. I mean, they're flying people into Orlando anyway, but you know, Chicago is a hub for a lot of airlines, so you know, it's not the most expensive city to fly into. You get a pretty cheap ticket to Chicago most of the time just because it's a hub for so many airlines. You know, I think if they're smart from that standpoint with where they put it and try to make the shows as cost effective as possible, it makes a lot of sense.
You're probably right. My second question concerns the X Division. And this is going to be a clear hypothetical. If either of you were placed in charge of Impact Wrestling's booking, which you somewhat facetiously asked for a couple of weeks ago, how would you fix the plight of the X Division since it has been spinning its wheels for quite some time?
What do you think there, Andrew? I'll give you first crack at rebooking the X Division because it's a project.
First, I would bring in Desmond Xavier and actually put him on TV.
Yes.
Give him
the man they forgot.
Drago, I would bring. Yeah, Drago's coming back. I would bring in. I would try to establish some goodwill and throw some big money at somebody like Ricochet when he's free from his Lucha Underground contract, like a Zack Sabre Jr. Somebody just along that lines that the indie fans, the hardcore fans love, because right now most people don't have those fond memories of the X Division. I would do a lot more one-on-one matches as well. because we don't really get to know their personalities. Like, Caleb Connolly has been around for a year. I can't even picture what his voice sounds like. So yeah, bring in some guys, one-on-one matchups, actually give them promo time, put them in the main events and singles matches. And, yeah, just freshen things up a bit, because it seems like we just see the same six people or so over and over and over again. And that, just drags things down. So it's definitely something they should do, because if you watch 205 Live, all they really have going on is Enzo Amore. And I think athletically they could do a lot better than that.
Yeah, I would agree. I think a roster overhaul is the first thing you need to do there. And then just give the X division some meaning. I mean, at some point, just come out and say that it's a cruiserweight division. You know, they've never really said that. Mm-hmm. It's about no limits, no, and it's about all this other stuff. Like, that doesn't mean anything. Just give it a weight limit. So, okay, it's cruiserweight division. You know, it's for people that are 205 pounds and less, or whatever we want to come up with a number. We call it the X division. And then you're right. You know, I think you need to go out and get some guys that you know, guys that the quote-unquote indie fan is going to enjoy, because that is how you're going to generate some goodwill. That's how you're going to generate some buzz. You know, I think they need to do some things from a marketing standpoint, signing guys, whether it's Ricochet or whether, you know, whomever, that have some buzz on their own. And, yeah, you know what? Those guys might cost you a little bit of money, but you need some goodwill. And I think goodwill is a grassroots thing, and it can start with the X division, because that's where you can pull in a lot of that fan base. But you need to sign guys that fan base is excited about. And then, you know what, you might have whether it's the Ring of Honor fan or the PWG fan, the fan that isn't watching WWE, that isn't watching Impact, if you can get your X division to a point with guys that they know, that they like, that they'll tune in for, you might be able to gain some viewers there. And you know what? They might not stick around to watch Johnny Impact versus Eli Drake, because they might not care. But even if you get those eyeballs on your show for a little bit, it's a start. And I think that if you redo the X division and revamp it and give it a facelift the right way, it can be something that can start to generate some goodwill for the company. But you know, I don't trust that they're going to go in that direction. I mean, and it's easy for us to sit here and say, well, they should spend money and sign Ricochet, and they should spend money and sign this guy. I don't know what they have for money either. But even if you were to stick with the guys that they have, I believe they can do a better job than they can do a better job with what they've had so far. Because, you know, no offense to Sanjay Dutt, but like we've been saying for months, I'm just not excited about Trevor Lee versus Sanjay Dutt again. It sort of lost its luster a while ago, and if that's what they go at Bound for Glory, I mean, I think they're going to go with a multi-man match, because they always do on pay-per-view in the X division. Yeah. But, you know, I'm not excited about Sanjay Dutt versus Trevor Lee.
Yeah, no, not at all.
And my final question concerns Impact exits. Where do you foresee names such as Robbie E going now that he has left Impact? Do you foresee him and some of the other names going to WWE, or do you see him helping Billy Corgan start the latest version of the National Wrestling Alliance, or do you think Ring of Honor will take him, even though he would probably be perceived as a comedy wrestler there?
Yeah, I mean, thanks for bringing this up, because we were going to hit on some of the news this week that both Robbie E and Eddie Kingston are done with the company. You know, for both those guys, I think more so for Robbie E that he is probably someone that Corgan could use. Only because, you know, Robbie E was getting a little bit of a push when Billy Corgan was in charge. Billy Corgan was around during the World Title Series, and Robbie E was getting a little bit of a push there. And at the same time, you know, Kingston was a guy that was signed, I think, during the Corgan era as well. It was brought in last fall when everything sort of fell apart. But I believe the Corgan was still involved. When the what was it? The DOC. What was their names?
DCC.
Yeah, that's real memorable, huh? He was brought in, and Corgan was around for the beginning of that. So both those guys have a history with him. I don't think, honestly, that either one of them are guys that WWE would be interested in. I just don't see, maybe Robbie E is a comedy guy, like you said, but Kingston just doesn't seem to fit the mold of guys that they are typically interested in. I'm a big Kingston fan, but I just don't think WWE is really going to be interested. I think Kingston will go back to the indie scene. But maybe I'm wrong. For a while, I would have said that they weren't interested in somebody like Kevin Owens either. So, Andrew, what do you see there? What do you think are the prospects for both of those guys moving forward?
Yeah, I think Corgan would probably be interested. I want to say more so in Kingston, just because it looked like he had something in mind for the DCC. That seemed like a Corgan project with those videos, those vignettes that preceded their debut. And then I think right after they showed up, he was ousted from the company. So we never got to see what his vision, his idea was for them. Ravi E, I think, would be tougher to ever take seriously if Corgan was interested in him or anyone. I could see him as like a Kurt Hawkins type role on, say, SmackDown, which I don't think is really an insult, if he can do that, show up and just job to people. But honestly, I think maybe he'd show up on NXT a couple of times in squash matches, and then we'd just never see him again. He's 34, which isn't that old, but considering he's been playing an awful gimmick for 7 years now, that's just he just doesn't have any demand behind him, I don't think.
Yeah, he would need a total overhaul. They'd have to do a haircut, probably name change. They'd have to Luke Gallows him, in a way.
Oh yeah.
Just come up with a reason for why he's completely different.
Yeah, I believe you're right, guys.
All right, Kyle, hey, we appreciate it.
You're welcome. We'll talk next week.
Yes, we will. All right. Again, 515-605-9345 is the number. We got more people on hold. Please hang on. We got to go to another break. When we come back, we'll get right back to the phone calls here in the PW Torch Livecast.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
All right, back to the phone calls. Area code 814. You're up next. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
This is Ryan from Trumbull, Maryland.
Hey, how you doing?
Question I have for you. Good. First thing I noticed at the start of the show is they honored Lance Russell. Do you think that possibly could bring more fans into the company, since WWE didn't even do a memorial? And it seemed like a lot of fans were upset. Like, even Dave Meltzer was complaining last night that SmackDown didn't even mention Lance on their show last night.
Yeah, I don't know if it'll bring necessarily fans in, but I thought it was a nice gesture and definitely smart to do. He obviously has no history with the company, but still, he's got a deep history with the business and with the industry. So it doesn't take much. WWE, I know, was criticized this week for not mentioning him, but yeah, it doesn't take much. It's a graphic. That's really all that needs to be. Just acknowledge that someone that was a big part of the business is gone. I thought it was a nice gesture for sure. Andrew, did you catch that at the beginning of the show?
I did, yeah, and I think that is one of the cooler things of Impact, is that they do stuff like that for everyone in the industry. Even when Nicole Bass passed away, they did that, and she never showed up in TNA, and WWE didn't mention her whatsoever. It's not one of those things. I don't think it's going to bring people to the brand, but it makes the brand – it's a good message from them, and it's just a nice thing to do. So that is a good goodwill thing for them to do, so – in the long run, stuff like that adds up, I think.
Second question is about American Top Team. Do you see them maybe, any of them getting a niche to Russell, since they're so involved in the storylines.
Yeah, you know what? I was thinking about that tonight, and it does make sense that that's what this would lead to. I mean, it seems like it's leading to Moose versus Lashley, but you know, having those guys involved the way that they have, I don't know where they are necessarily in their fighting careers, but with some guys, we've seen it where you get to the end of your MMA career, and if there's still money to be made in wrestling, then some guys have tried to pursue it in the past, and I definitely think that it seems like there's guys there that are interested. If not, they wouldn't be involved in the segments. They wouldn't have gone to Orlando to be part of these tapings. So, yeah, you know, I wouldn't be – I don't know who necessarily, but I wouldn't be surprised if we saw them or somebody be interested. And, you know, it's probably smart from Impact standpoint to try to get in with these guys now. I mean, because ultimately everyone's goal it would be to get to the WWE. That's where the money is. But whether it's, you know, Kobe Covington, you know, who's got obviously some time left in MMA, but anybody really. I mean, King Mo has dabbled in wrestling while still fighting at the same time. So there's, I think, potential there to do something with those guys down the road. I didn't particularly like that segment. I thought it made Moose look like a complete idiot to, you know, to walk in. You know, what did he expect? He walked into America, into the gym, and of course he's going to get, you know, jumped and you know, get beat down, which is what happened. But overall, the relationship with them, I think, has been pretty good. And you know what? Dan Lambert has been a pretty good heel. He's been a pretty good heel manager. And with some exceptions, you know, the comments about how they're real fighters and all the stuff, I'm not a fan of that whatsoever. But you take that out, and I think their involvement has been pretty good. And Andrew, what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I was actually hoping that's what this was all headed for. I guess originally in my mind, I pictured like some sort of Nexus-like stable when they just show up at shows and beat the crap out of a bunch of people. And it seemed they were kind of headed that way when they would just bully people backstage, but then they all just disappeared. And it looks like it's just leading to Moose versus Lashley, and I'm guessing the MMA guys will all be in his corner. So yeah, I mean, I would hope so with all this time devoted to them. It seems like a waste to not at least do some sort of match like that. But then again, they're going to have to go to the effort of finding Moose some partners. And maybe they just don't want to do another stable battle right now since they're kind of doing the AAA thing. But, yeah, I think it's something they should do. Otherwise, yeah, it just feels like a bit of a waste.
Yeah. You know, and it doesn't have to be anything crazy too, but these guys are trained fighters. So, you know, you could put something together, I think, pretty quickly where they can, you know, D'Angelo Williams, you know, trained for not all that long and was passable in a tag team match. I think you could get some of those guys who are trained fighters up to speed, you know, fairly quickly.
And my final question for you is there any chance of you getting a Impact wrestler or personality on the show since a few years ago, it seemed like he had a really good relationship with Impact Wrestling as far as the torch getting EC3 on and Dixie Carter and some of the other superstars on your shows?
You know what? It's not something we've ever really pursued, to be quite honest with you. They were the company last year under the previous ownership had sort of closed up shop from a media standpoint. There was really access to nobody. But this new regime that has come in under Anthem Sports has been a lot more friendly to wrestling media. They do a conference call every week with various talent and people involved in the company. So I'm sure if we made the overture, we probably could. But it's honestly not something that we've really even we've never even reached out to them yet.
Okay, thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely, anytime. All right, let's go right back to the phone calls at 515-605-9345. And let's go to area code 419. 419, you're up next. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
This is Denny, VIP member from Toledo. I'm at work, so sorry if you guys hear some banging and stuff going on in the background.
No problem.
Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. I got to be completely honest with you guys. I don't really watch Impact, and I haven't got to watch tonight's episode. But one of my good friends made his Impact debut tonight, and I saw it on social media, Trey Miguel. So I wanted to call and brag a little bit because I've known that guy for years. He's a super talented guy. I don't know I don't know if he got to really showcase what he did. I know he was in a tag match against OVE. I know Dave Chris pretty well too. He's he's a really good guy and a really really talented guy. But I saw Trey Miguel just completely tear the house down with Shane Strickland one night at an indie show here in Toledo, where I'm from. And the kid's super talented, and I'm just really excited to see that he made that kind of a debut on such a mass scale. What did you guys think about his debut?
Well, it's good to know. I mean, I honestly don't know much about him, but he was in there for most of that match. You know, I forget. I think it was John Bolin was the guy who he was tagging with against OVE. But Trey was the one who started the match, and he was in there. He was in there for the majority of it, and looked good. You know, I mean, obviously OVE was getting most of the offense, but I thought he looked good. And you know, it feels like those are the types of guys that Impact should be going after right now. Guys who can work, guys who can put on good matches, who aren't on the radar yet, because you can sort of mold them and make them your own from a character standpoint. You know, we saw it with a guy like Desmond Xavier, who hasn't, you know, was a relative unknown really up until he won the Super X Cup a couple of weeks ago, or about a month ago. And even OVE, I mean, OVE wasn't, you know, OVE, if you follow indie wrestling, you knew who they were, but it's not like they're former WWE guys. So these are the types of guys that I think they should be signing, guys who can wrestle good matches, who haven't really had their name made on a national stage yet, and Impact can be the place where, you know, they get that exposure. Andrew, what are your thoughts on how he looked?
He did a good job. He was there to make them look good, make OVE look good. And I thought he did that. And nothing in my mind stands out for him like blowing the spot or anything. And I had that same thought watching him and his partner. Like, they just need to bring in more fresh tag teams like this and new fresh faces. And I would definitely want my team to get.
Cool. Yeah, that's really all I had, guys. I saw it on social media. I haven't got to watch the match yet because I'm at work. But I knew I had to call the live cast and get you guys' thoughts. Appreciate it. Keep a lookout on him. Kid's super talented.
Awesome. Will do. Thanks for the phone call.
Well, thank you.
All right. Yeah, no, that's I really do. I mean, I really believe that. I think that those are the type of guys that Impact should be looking to sign. You know, the guys that haven't had a name made yet, that don't have, you know, this is probably a bad way to phrase it, but don't have, you know, the WWE mid-card stink on them, where they come in, Impact, and are immediately pushed to the top, because that happens all the time. And it hasn't worked in years, and it's what they've always done. I mean, it worked with Kurt Angle, but Kurt Angle wasn't a mid-carder. I would say it worked with Christian, too, to a certain extent, but he was the first one. But there's a whole laundry list of guys that it hasn't really worked with, whether it's Mr. Kennedy or Ken Anderson, who I like. But, you know, I actually was excited when they signed Ken Anderson, because I said to myself, you know, here's a guy that was underutilized in WWE. They blew it with him over something that I thought was stupid. You know, when he got his release, I thought it was dumb to be released for those reasons. But it never seemed to really click. And he got a good push, but it never really seemed to click. And there's a whole laundry list of guys like that have come in. You know, Booker T's run in TNA was awful. But there's a whole laundry list of guys where that formula doesn't seem to work. So why not go after guys, whether it's Desmond Xavier, whether it's Trey, whether it's guys that don't have names yet on a national stage, that you know can work, that you know could put together good matches, and you can be the platform to give them national exposure for the first time. Because you know what? At the end of the day, even though Impact isn't being watched by a million people anymore, it's still being watched by 300,000. And you know what? You can follow indie wrestling, and I do, and I like going to indie shows and all this other stuff. Very rarely do you see an indie show that draws 300,000 eyeballs. You just don't. you know, true indie shows. They're not drawing 300,000 people to their video on demand or to their building. So you can give guys exposure, you know, on a national level for the first time. It's the type of moves that at this point they should be doing, because at this point, you know, really, what else do they have to lose?
Right. Yeah, I hate to pick on Chris Masters every single week. I'm sorry, Chris Adonis. But yeah, like I said, you turn on the show and you see him, and he's not terrible by any means at anything, but it's just like, oh, I've seen him before. I've seen him the past 10 years in various roles. You see somebody new, and you can at least go, oh, what's this guy about? Like, is he good? Is he got an interesting gimmick? Is he going to be back. But you know what you're getting with so many of these former WWE mid-carders. Like you said, some of them do have an upside that was never utilized, but many of them have been let go for a reason. And when Impact just picks them all up, it just feels like leftovers, really.
Yeah, and the one name that I know I've brought up a lot on this show is Keith Lee, right? If Impact were to go after a guy like Keith Lee...
Oh, yeah.
Indie wrestling fans know who Keith Lee is. Most people that listen to this show know who Keith Lee is. But how many of the 300,000 people that watch Impact every week know who Keith Lee is? How many? Realistically, out of 300,000, I mean, I don't even want to pick a number. Maybe 30,000, 40,000 people? I mean, I don't know. I have no idea. But I would say that the majority of the 300,000 eyeballs would be seeing Keith Lee for the first time. And now you have a chance to take someone who's really good, who's really unique, and mold him into something that's yours. And if he sticks around long enough, he becomes an Impact guy. Sort of the way, I mean, you know, Moose was in Ring of Honor, but sort of the way Moose has become. You know, I think Moose has become an Impact guy. Eli Drake was in NXT at one point, or I don't know if it was still FCW then, but was in WWE developmental, but he's been molded into an Impact guy, clearly. I mean, Eli Drake, you know, is most known for being an Impact wrestling. So there's an example both ways. One of taking a new guy, one of taking a guy who's been around for a while, and you can do that. And I think that, you know, they need to be done with the days of trying to live off somebody's WWE name. A, it costs too much money. You know, if they don't have a lot of money to spend. So why pay for a name if you're not going to get a lot out of it? And B, you know, they need to be cultivating their own stars, new stars, guys that they can really build a show around.
Yeah, I mean, where they're at right now with the amount of people watching, moving all, you know, from one network to the next that's in due part a big reason because of all these former WWE names. It was a lesson that they had never, ever, ever learned. They overpaid for all these people. Very, very few of them delivered in any meaningful way. And most of them, yeah, a lot of them just didn't fit. Like you said, Mr. Anderson, he seemed like he should have been the next big star in the company, but it just never clicked in any meaningful way. A complete waste of money in most cases, because even if you, I mean, most of those guys, say Mr. Anderson, you probably could have brought in 5, 6, you know, good indie talents and signed them to deals for what he was making. So, you know, their reputation for being this place for where WWE and WCW guys would go is pretty well earned over the years.
All right, let's go to another break. And when we come back, we'll hit our top three. Our top three this week are the top three, or our top three, most frustrating moments of 2017. And then we're going to get to our VIP after show for VIP members. Of course, that's not live, but you can get it on the VIP feed. We'll discuss, well, we got to make our Hell in a Cell picks. Andrew and I have been making picks on the VIP after show, keeping track, and I know he wiped the floor with me at No Mercy, but I'm going to try for a comeback with Hell in a Cell coming up on Sunday night. So we'll make our Hell in a Cell picks for VIP members on the VIP after show coming up in a little bit. But we're going to go to a break right now. We'll come back with our top three most frustrating moments so far of 2017, because if this show's any indication, you got to remember, there's still 3 months left of television. There might be some more frustrating moments on the way, but we'll get to our top three frustrating moments in a minute. You're listening to the PW Torch Livecast.
Thank you for being a PW Torch Livecast listener. As of mid-July 2017, the PW Torch Livecast lineup has undergone some changes. My shows have moved to a new feed, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, available at Podcast One, or just search Wade Keller in your podcast app. But there's tons of great content every week, including Saturdays at 6 Eastern, the new Deep Dive with Rich Fan, covering a single topic in professional wrestling in depth. Join him live with phone calls at 6 Eastern every Saturday. Sunday nights at 8 Eastern, it is Wrestling Night in America with Pat McNeil and Greg Parks, where they focus on the supercards, the big events coming up in pro wrestling, or review the latest one. That's at 8 Eastern, or following a live pay-per-view, if there's a live pay-per-view on that Sunday. And then check out MMA Talk for pro wrestling fans every Monday night at 7 Eastern, hosted by Mike Hisko and other MMA Torch contributors. It's a chance for fans of both pro wrestling and MMA who share that in common to talk about the latest happenings in the world of mixed martial arts. Tuesdays, it's the best of PW Torch Livecast, a handpicked episode from our history that gives you a chance to catch up on a show you might have missed back in our earlier years. And then the PW Torch Nostalgia Hour with Jim Valley is back. It used to be called Saturday Morning Wrestling. Now it's Wednesdays at 5 Eastern. He takes your live calls and interviews some of the big names from pro wrestling's past. And then Thursday nights following GFW Impact, it's Mike McMahon and Andrew Sochak with a recap of the just concluded Impact Wrestling show on Pop TV. So as soon as Impact goes off the air in the United States on Pop TV, join Mike and Andrew live right here at PWTorchLivecast.com. They'll be taking your calls. That's the new lineup of the PW Torch Livecast. Great diverse mix of shows with a great group of hosts. Keep listening and keep spreading the word and give us a 5-star rating over at iTunes with some kind comments in the listener comment section about which shows you like and why. That's PW Torch Livecast, new lineup. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Back here in the PW Torch Livecast, Andrew, another name that I was scrolling Twitter during that break, another name that they could sign, that they could sort of mold into their own, which is a guy that indie wrestling fans would recognize, Ethan Page, who announced last week that he's done with Evolve Wrestling. That's another guy who has name value to an indie fan that that Impact could certainly go after and try to utilize.
Yeah, I was thinking, I mean, whatever they're paying somebody like El Patron, you could get a couple hot young indie talents instead of him. And I think it would establish a lot more goodwill towards the company. They would be able to wrestle for years longer and just provide better matches and more excitement. So I think it's definitely possible. They're just putting some of their money in the wrong place.
Absolutely. All right. Before we get to our top three, let's go through some of the segments on this show that we haven't yet discussed. Like we said, they did air a graphic before the show began on Lance Russell. They also aired a graphic that said "Pray for Vegas." Again, just smart decisions, I think, from Anthem to acknowledge things like this and just take a second on their show to make an acknowledgement. I think is you know, good from, like you said, a goodwill standpoint.
Yeah, for sure, absolutely.
So we talked about the first segment already, Garza Jr. against Adonis, that set up the ridiculous number one contenders match next week. We saw OVE. We talked about the OVE match a couple of minutes ago. They got a pretty quick win. What did you think on the segments just setting up the Bound for Glory match of LAX versus OVE in a rematch in a 51-50 street fight? Not quite sure how that differs from a regular street fight, but OVE versus LAX coming up at Bound for Glory in a street fight.
OVE segment I didn't think was very good. Their promo, it was just very generic wrestling sound bites. Though I thought LAX's, I thought that was pretty much maybe the highlight of the show for me. Just their intensity. They are upset that they lost, and you know, quite often we somehow don't see that in wrestling, that people are just pissed off and you know, they nearly came to blows over it. And every week I pretty much say it, that they're the coolest thing going in the company and they feel more real than just about anything. And one of the few bright spots for me.
Yeah, I agree. Like you said, at least they were upset about losing the titles, which is not something that we seem to see often enough. So yeah, I agree there. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of a rematch, but you know what? Like we've said in the past, what other options do they have? You know, really, there's
Veterans of War.
Yeah, there's pretty much two tag teams in the entire company right now. So then they had the women's segment, which we talked a little bit about earlier. It was decent promo, I guess. I mean, it was sort of predictable with all these different people coming out and claiming that they deserve the title shot, and of course, Karen Jarrett made her presence felt. Any thoughts there?
I think Rosemary and Taya are kind of idiots because they didn't bother asking for a match.
Exactly. That's all you got to do, apparently. It's just ask for a match, yeah, and you get one. Joseph Park and Grado, a little bit of a guilty pleasure, of course. Grado had his first VIP meet and greet set up by Park. And my favorite part about this segment was the shot of Joseph Park just counting money and then gave Grado $20 and said that was his payment for the night, which... I have to assume, I mean, it ultimately is going to lead to Grado realizing he's getting screwed and a heel Joseph Park. I mean, I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But that seems to be where this is going.
That's my guess as well. Almost anyone in wrestling I can see as a heel or face, but I don't know how Joseph Park is going to work. My other thought on this was WWE is usually pretty strategic in how they position their 8 o'clock and 9 o'clock hours. So, you know, people changing channels will stumble across that. If you turned in at 8 o'clock central time, you would see Joseph Park and Grado. Not sure that's a great hook there.
Yeah, I noticed that too. We talked a little bit about the X Division six man earlier, but Matt Sydal and Sanjay Dutt and Petey Williams beat Trevor Lee, Caleb Conley, and Andrew Everett. My initial takeaway to this match was Andrew Everett's alive, so that's a good thing. We haven't seen him in forever.
Oh, yeah.
It was sort of the match itself I thought was pretty good, to be quite honest with you. I don't think it was a bad match, but the talking segment after the promo after just, again, was sort of the same thing as the women's match, all different guys, Sydal, Dutt, and Petey Williams, all yelling and screaming about how they should be number one contenders, and then going into Jim Cornette's office and doing some more yelling and screaming about how they should be number one contender. Okay. I don't know why Jim Cornette just didn't give everybody a title shot. That's what he did earlier when the women were all asking for title shots. Apparently he was going to do it different here because he just left the room and let them all argue with each other. Any thoughts on that match and then the yelling and screaming that took place after it?
I wish wrestling was more realistic because, in a sense, Jim Cornette should have just said to Petey Williams, like, get the hell out of here. You have no case. You lost clean to Trevor Lee last week, so you don't get another shot. And then the other thing is, yeah, Andrew Everett, we said we were corresponding on Twitter a little bit. Complete madness that Andrew Everett is now a heel again and aligned with Trevor Lee. Did I miss anything? Or he was a babyface last we saw him, right?
He was.
Nothing matters.
That's pretty much my reaction too. I don't know why they can't just have Jim Cornette say with any of these situations, like this has to do with the world title segment, the X Division title segment, and the women's title segment. Why doesn't Jim Cornette just come out and say, look, we have a champion. We don't see them, but we have a championship committee. Anthem Sports has a championship committee. Mm-hmm. And the championship committee, every Friday after Impact, we have the show on Thursday. Every Friday, that championship committee meets, and they come up with a top five contenders for each title. And that determines who's going to get the match, plain and simple. And maybe it's just because they want to tell these stories of people arguing over title shots, but I would much prefer feeling like I'm watching a company and a promotion that actually has their stuff together and has a committee. And no, there's mm-hmm. one, there's no arguing here. You could argue that you think you should be ranked higher and all this other stuff. There are some vehicles in which you could tell some stories coming out of that where people can argue and can argue with Jim Cornette that they should be higher and here's why. And Cornette then maybe gives them a match and say, well, go out and prove it, blah, 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 blah. But the constant bickering and arguing for title shots, there should be a system for why people have title shots. It shouldn't just mm-hmm. be so-and-so declares that they want to wrestle for a title. There should be a set of standards where someone needs to meet before they're allowed into a title shot. And it just seems like with every championship they have, that's being ignored.
Yeah. I mean, wrestling is on a major scale is probably not going to do win-loss records on air, but not everyone should have an equal shot to the title. Because if you pay attention as a viewer, you kind of know who has been on a roll and who hasn't. And it's silly that just all of a sudden everyone is suddenly equal and has an equal claim to it. It's just, yeah. I don't know. It just, again, makes it seem like nothing else matters.
It makes it seem like the matches don't matter. And if the matches don't matter, then why is anybody, why am I watching them? Why does anybody care? Give the matches exactly. some meaning. And then, you know, ultimately that could help your house show business too, because you can say, okay, you know what, we're going to be in New York this weekend or wherever, and, you know, headlining the show or on the show is going to be Matt Sydal against Petey Williams. And we know that our championship committee is going to be keeping an eye on that match because it could go a long way in determining who's going to be number one contender. And, you know, it gives people, even at house shows, gives them the feeling that they're actually watching something that has consequence and has importance.
Yeah. And this is why we should be the general managers of the show.
Hey, we keep talking about it, but after watching tonight, I'm not sure we could do worse.
I don't think we could.
Yeah. So let's see. From there, Laurel Van Ness was on. Laurel Van Ness came out after this segment. She was on a motorized wheelchair, and she was on her hunt for a man again. I don't know why she's on a motorized wheelchair at this point. That it was just there. I think, like a lot of things on the show, it was just there. Yeah, I mean, no explanation, really.
Yeah, it got a cheap laugh out of me, just with the randomness of it.
I laughed at it, yeah. I mean, again, guilty pleasure storyline. Mm-hmm. I like crazy Laurel Van Ness, so I'm not going to complain about it. I just thought it was weird. Then my biggest complaint. I've got a lot of complaints about this show, but another thing that just drove me crazy. Moose goes to American Top Team's facility in Colorado, and he was going to look for Bobby Lashley. So you got Moose. He's a babyface, by the way, if we're not keeping track.
Yeah.
Moose walks into an MMA gym, full of Bobby Lashley's teammates. He comes in yelling and screaming about how he's going to beat up Bobby Lashley. And then, lo and behold, Moose got his butt kicked and literally got thrown out of the building. I think the idea here, this is what I think they were going for. We're going to give them the benefit of the doubt.
Okay.
I think the idea here was, we're going to make Moose look really tough. Moose isn't going to care. He's going to walk in and he's going to try to fight Bobby Lashley. I took it as, Moose is an idiot. Because what did he think was going to happen? Did he think that everybody in the cage was going to be like, oh, well, yeah, we're training. Yeah, he's our teammate and everything. But you know what? We'll get out of the way so that you two can just have a fair fight. Like, honestly, it made Moose look like an idiot. What did he think was going to happen? He got jumped. He got beat up by a gang of Lashley's teammates, and he got thrown out of the building. Like, it didn't make Moose look tough. It made him look dumb.
Yeah, I just pictured him driving home crying after that on his own. Yeah, like when Steve Austin in the Attitude Era went up against the Corporation, he came with a truck. He came with some sort of
exactly
plan. He didn't just run in to get beat up by him. The other thing I thought was kind of funny was that they had a cameraman sitting next to him. So and he's talking to him. So it's kind of like one of those, oh, follow me. What I'm going to do? I'm going to go beat these guys up. And then he steps out, and they had footage of a drone, like. He brought a drone with him too, and somebody's record. It's just too post-produced. And then, of course, when he got thrown out of the cage, they like switched camera angles to make it look dramatic.
That was terrible.
They were way overdone.
That was a really bad edit. That was they showed a clip of him, like you said, getting tossed out of the cage, and then they show a close-up of the ground and Moose just like falling on the ground, and right directly in front of this camera. I chuckled at that because I was just like, oh, who thought that looked good? That looked bad.
It was like Saved by the Bell to me. I don't know.
That's a good analogy. I mean, I guess we're heading towards Moose versus Lashley. Okay. Like, I'm fine with it. You know, I don't have any problems with that match happening at Bound for Glory, but this segment, I thought, made Moose look like an idiot. Like you said, walk in with something. Walk in with a baseball bat. Walk in with something that I think would give you a chance. Don't just walk in going, I'm going to fight, you know, all 35 MMA fighters who are in this gym. I'm going to take them all on. Like, that doesn't...
Yeah.
If it's supposed to be getting sympathy on the baby face, it didn't. It just, I think, made people roll their eyes and go, well, look at this idiot. Like, of course he's going to get beat up.
So bad. Yeah.
And then the main event came after that. Tejano and Phantasma beat EC3 and James Storm. This match went about 20 minutes. Another one where we're going to end up with a rematch of some kind happening at Bound for Glory, because I'm sure that EC3 and James Storm are going to get a third partner, and then Tejano and Phantasma and Pagano are going to fight EC3, James Storm, and whoever their third partner is. You can pretty much tell that's where they're going. So another match at Bound for Glory that's going to be a version of a match we've already seen before, I think.
Yeah, it felt so pointless to me because I've been pointing out every week just how AAA has come out on the losing side of this, and yet they, well, I mean, it's good that they came out on the winning side tonight just to give them a little something, but they'd been beaten so badly that there was no point to ever have a match. And the other thing was that, things don't happen in a vacuum. So last week, James Storm yelling Taco Bell at them, that carries over, and I can't enjoy him as a babyface at the moment. So bad, just bad ending.
Totally agree. All right, let's go to our top three. We, as you could tell, we loved this show. Let's go to our top three, and I think rightfully so. Our top three this week are our top three most frustrating moments of 2017. I put my list together before this show, so nothing on this show I have in my list. Even though I think I could rightfully put, three things from this show on my list, but let's get to it. What's your number three most frustrating? As I look at this too, I didn't really go with particular moments. I kind of went with themes. But what was your number three most frustrating moment of 2017 so far?
Yes. We should probably do this again in a couple more months.
Yeah,
I'll say end of the year.
We should.
I will go the release of Low Key, or him leaving the company. For me, that is very frustrating. For 2017, he has been one of the few bright spots in this promotion for me. Low Key's return, LAX, longer main event matches in general. But to me, he just, he's like a star. He's someone that feels completely believable. When I watch Raw, I don't buy into Seth Rollins. I don't buy into Dean Ambrose. They just feel like wacky people playing characters. Low Key seems like a badass who could kick the crap out of anyone. So I've always been a fan of his work for the most part. Excited to see him back. And then as soon as he starts doing really good things, had that good match with Johnny Impact, looked like he was going to get a main event match with El Patron, he's gone. So maybe he'll come back someday, maybe not, but just a good thing that is gone from the company.
Yeah, that sort of plays into one of mine as well, which I'll get to in a minute, but I totally agree. It's, I felt like he could have been a more important piece, and reportedly he was upset over his positioning. He wanted to be in the world title hunt, and they didn't see him in that picture, but I definitely think he would have been a good fit there. I had my number three as just anything and everything involving Karen Jarrett, pretty much anytime she's on the screen. I just don't know why she's there. We have an authority figure now in Jim Cornette who's supposed to be in charge. And why Karen Jarrett needs to be on the show, I don't get. I don't understand why she's on the show to begin with. I mean, is she in charge of the Knockouts division? I mean, that at least would be a reason, but I don't believe they've said that. She seems to be, because she is making all the knockout decisions for that division. But again, they've never explained it, but she's there, and she's trying to be Stephanie McMahon, and I roll my eyes and shake my head every time she comes on the screen. I don't think she's good at what she does, and I just don't see the point.
There is no worse sound in all of wrestling right now than the first couple seconds of her theme song, I would say.
And what it is, she comes across as a heel. Like, that's the other thing. She's supposed to be a babyface. Yeah. But the way she acts is totally like a heel. She comes across with this this self-importance, this self... there's no self-awareness there whatsoever, I think, about the way she's coming across.
Yeah, no. Somehow I didn't even think of her, but I could definitely see that also being my number one that I thought about her.
What'd you have as your number two?
Number two, maybe it's loosely tied to that one. When Dutch Mantel came back to the company, I was really excited for the Knockout. I thought he was going to restore their former glory. He brought an awesome Kong, and she was battling Gail Kim, Raisha Saeed, ODB, just Daphne came in, and all these exciting, great, talented women were coming in, and they blew away everything WWE was doing. And right now, WWE is just running laps around them, really. It's fine. I mean, they have some good talent there, but really there's only like six women total. And there's one feud going on at a time, and that's it.
Same thing with the tag division.
It was worse than maybe. Like we were saying earlier. I was hoping by now there'd be a dozen different women and a few women we'd never seen before who were really talented, who had somehow been overlooked by WWE, but nothing, none of it. I guess Taryn Terrell came back, but not like some of the other talented women from the past. It's just been very disappointing in general.
I had a similar number two, not so much about the Knockouts division, but about the X division. And just two main themes in particular, and that is the disappearance of Desmond Xavier, who won this tournament that was, I thought the tournament was really well done. We've talked about it on the show. And then he just completely vanished and was nowhere to be found, and they haven't done anything with him since, which I think makes no sense at all. That combined with the continued misuse of Trevor Lee has driven me nuts. They don't know what they – I mean, we've talked about it over and over and over again. I feel like I'm beating a dead horse, but they don't know what they have there. They have no clue what they have in Trevor Lee whatsoever. And it's frustrating to watch them, in my opinion, waste him. It's frustrating to watch them waste Desmond Xavier, who was so good in that tournament and had some momentum, and now they've blown it. I mean, they've blown the opportunity because hasn't been seen, really, since he's won it. So just the other thing is for what? You know, they haven't brought in Desmond Xavier since he won that tournament, blown an opportunity with him, and why? No offense to Petey Williams, but to bring Petey Williams back? I mean, what's the reason that Desmond Xavier hasn't been on TV? It just doesn't make any sense. And look, I like Petey Williams. I think he's been a shot in the arm to a certain extent in that division. But Kylan said it earlier, they're spinning their tires. And whether it's the Knockouts division or the X division, it feels like both of those are just spinning their tires. Completely off topic, though, before we get to our number ones, another division that we haven't talked about is the Grand Championship. And is it gone, do you think? Has it disappeared? Because EC3 is not even carrying it to the ring anymore.
I think he did tonight, actually.
Oh, did he? All right. Then never mind.
Yeah. Still slightly alive.
All right, then. Yeah, I know. I thought, you know, and again, I was typing up the report and stuff as doing ring entrances. I'm usually typing up the analysis parts of the report. And I looked up quickly, and I didn't see it, so I thought he did not carry it to the ring. But never mind, then.
Oh, yeah.
What did you have as your number one?
Number one has been, I guess, driving me crazy for years in some form for, I guess, 15 years now. The name of the company, it has switched so many times this year. it's never been good. We've gone, what is it? It started out as Impact, I think, this year, went to Global Force Wrestling. And I remember for months, we thought it would be ridiculous for them to name the company that. And then lo and behold, it happened. And then it only happened for a month. Maybe, and now it's back to Impact, and hey, maybe someday it'll be Global Force again, but oh, every title on TV is a Global Force one right now, so no idea what's going on, no idea what this company is going to be named. All of it has stink on it. From a personal standpoint, our show's name has changed 3 times now. Knock it off.
Exactly.
So I could probably get very upset and go for an hour on this, but I'll just try to keep it brief. Yes, the name.
That was my number one, too, was the constant rebrandings. but, yeah, we should just name our show the Thursday Night Livecast at this point, because like I don't know what we're following, because the name changes every week. It's frustrating, like you said. It just doesn't make it look like they have their stuff together, and it's because I don't think they do have their stuff together. It makes the company feel like it's incredibly unorganized, makes it feel like they don't know what they're doing, and I think the whole story of the rebrand, where they went from TNA to Impact, Impact to GFW, and now back to Impact, all in a 10-month span, is a pretty good microcosm for the entire year and the entire ownership so far. Start and stop, start and stop, start and stop. We're going this way. Nope, we're going this way. Nope, we're going to go this way again now. Whoop, nope, back it up. We're going to go this way instead. There doesn't seem to be any long-term vision from the booking or from a business standpoint. I guess they have money. I mean, if the one positive compared to last year, I guess they have money now. You don't hear stories about guys' checks bouncing, so that's always good. But complete lack of direction and planning, it feels like. It feels like from a business standpoint, from a booking standpoint, they are just flying by the seat of their pants.
Yeah, and they're never going to get any sort of credibility whatsoever until they get a name, keep it, and keep it for a while. And that could be a while before that happens.
Exactly. All right. Anything else you want to add before we wrap up this week's episode?
No, I don't think so. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm on maybe once a week, say a couple pithy TNA impact comments and call it a week. I'm at Andrew Souck. I'm also an editor at pwpodcast.com. Check that site out for your go-to place for pro wrestling podcast news and recaps.
All right, you can follow me on Twitter at Mike McMahon PW. You can look at my report from Impact Tonight at pwtorch.com. And you can also listen to Andrew and I on our VIP after show for VIP members. If you're not a VIP member, then you can't. So you should become one. I know we had a couple of calls from VIP members tonight. So VIP members get a ton. You don't just get our after show, believe me. In the month of September, or the month of August, I believe it was, we had over 130 VIP-exclusive audio podcasts. That includes our after shows. It includes the Daily Weight Killer Hotline. It includes
90
the Bruce
seconds.
Mitchell Audio Show. It includes the... The Fixaton Martin, Sean Radican shows. It includes everything. I mean, and of course, access to the PW Torch newsletter, weekly VIP exclusive columns, etc. So you should become PW Torch VIP. And if you are a VIP member, you can listen to Andrew and I talk about Hell in a Cell in just a couple of minutes. If you're on the VIP feed, it'll probably follow the show. So that will do it for this week. Andrew and I will talk to you next week as soon as GFW / Impact / TNA / whatever this company is called goes off the air on Thursday nights. But that'll do it for this week. Thanks, everybody, for calling. Thanks for emailing, and we'll talk next week as soon as Impact goes off the air right here on the PW Torch Livecast.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and Sure Talk contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Killer Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the SE Editor format of the Weight Killer Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Pass Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the livecast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip.
Nightcast.